He doesn't want his blood sugar to dip. Oh, Lisa.
Off and join the session. Not bad.
Can't sleep on that side.
He has to sleep in the chair.
Mr. Sanders, are you ready, sir? Okay.
Thank you.
I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, February 28, 2012. I apologize a little bit with this cough. I hope that it doesn't create a big problem today. Would the audience please join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Thank you.
I'd move the minutes from February 21st.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The minutes of February 21st. Are there any additions, corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Next item is public comment number one. This is where members of the audience may address the board on a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address us regarding a topic on today's agenda? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on. The request is a public hearing item, consideration of Resolution 1263, a budget amendment. Auditor Lucy Martin and Assistant Auditor, what's your name?
Lisa
Markley. Glad to have you back.
Good morning.
Hey.
I bring before you the amended budget. This was published on February 16th. We're showing an increase in revenues of a little over $400,000, an increase of expenses in close to $800,000. This changed our ending fund balance for the combined general and supplemental funds by 0.03%. We did the amendment for several different departments, which you'll see also on the appropriations resolution, which happens after this. The attorney's office, conservation department, animal control, environmental health, IRVM, and countywide services. Happy to go over any details of those if you'd like. It is really nice. We haven't amended the budget since August, which I think that means we did a good job budgeting this year. This will bring us in line, and just so you know, the last we can amend the budget again for this fiscal year is May 30th, so if we want to do another amendment, I would recommend mid-May, since this one's going to a wedding in Jamaica.
And with this amendment, how do you feel about the need in May? I mean, does this get us where we need to be? And I know that, you know, with our new budgeting practice of last year, I think there was an expectation that we were going to have to come in and address some things as we really tried to take it all the way down to the bone. But what do you see coming?
Just for my own department, we did a mailing for the new redistricting. The Secretary of State's office did that for us. It was a little more expensive than we anticipated, and with the cards coming back, I think we might be able to cover that in-house.
There have been a couple departments that, as I was putting this together and getting this prepared, have said, oh, by the way.
Right.
So there's a possibility we're going to have to amend it again.
Yeah, historically, at the 11th hour, we've always had one or two things come up that we weren't aware of, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we amended one more time this fiscal, but it would probably just be, you know, tweaking again.
Right.
I think.
And some moving of some designated funds or assigned funds that need to be in the budget now that we weren't aware of, because they're actually going to get paid for. So.
Okay. Well, good question, Rick. Though. Anything else as far as that's concerned? Okay, at this time, then, I would open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to the budget amendment resolution? Seeing no one, then I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for direction.
I'll move approval of resolution 1263.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of resolution 1263 as submitted. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Resolution 1263, FY12 budget amendment is adopted. And now moving down to additional items. The consideration of resolution 1264, the appropriations amendment. I always like that sound, appropriation amendment.
You mean you actually want to be able to spend this money?
Right. You need to appropriate the money so you can spend it. And then this will affect the departments for the attorney's office, conservation, IRVM, countywide services, animal control, environmental health, and the human service center. Which that goes to the construction that's ongoing there right now. So,
okay. Any questions directed to the auditor's office regarding these proposed amendment?
I just say really good job. I like going from August till now without without doing any of these. That's
so do we.
Really good things going on.
Yeah.
I'd move approval of resolution 1264.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. The approval of resolution 1264. This will be a roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Resolution 1264 appropriation amendment is adopted.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Take care of that arm, will you? Okay, and then moving on. Continued discussion about furnishing for community service. We have Deb Shilroff, our CPC, and Cindy Daughtry. Daughtry? Oh, that was close from Story Kenworthy. Welcome.
Morning. This is a continuation of the conversation we started last week about the furnishings for community services for the lower level of the building at the Human Services Center, and in particular, it's our cubicle space. And what I've handed out are two drawings. The one drawing like this is our existing cubicle arrangement on the second floor of the Human Services Center, and then the second drawing is the arrangement of the cubicles in the area down in the lower level of the building. And so we've taken a look at one of the things that the board instructed me to do was to go back and look and see if there was any possibility of using the cubicle panels and the office furniture in the cubicle area in the lower level. So we did take a look at that. Cindy came over. We took some measurements. We went downstairs, and then we compared the drawings. And what we're finding is in the first drawing in our existing area, we've got cubicles in about three different sizes.
Yep.
And so the panels are different according to the size of the cubicle. And in the lower level of the building, we've standardized the cubicles so that they're all the same size. Plus, there is an extra one. We've got 11 cubicles currently. We're going to have 12 in the lower level of the building. And so the other difference is that the workstations in the lower level will be wall-mounted, where in our current level, they are mounted on the cubicle panel itself.
There are four offices that will be hung on a wall as opposed to a panel, and that's not currently available upstairs.
Got it.
Before, thank you. So the four out of the 12 cubicles would be on the wall, just because of the arrangement being different than what we have currently. Our current arrangement, the cubicles are pretty, they're in a more of a linear type of arrangement where we've had a little more open space downstairs, and so we worked them around the other offices in the conference room.
Another comment on the product upstairs versus the product downstairs. The product upstairs is a different manufacturer, which is now, the manufacturer's not obsolete, but that product's obsolete. Second of all, we can't furnish it in case there need to be a different connector or whatever, so that kind of...
So, if just to make sure that my mind is correct, in the diagram that you're looking here, we're talking about needing to replace cubicles as well as existing as new furniture as well. Is that correct?
That's what's on that second drawing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And originally part of the conversation, I thought, was that if we did not utilize all of the space initially on the second floor, whether or not in the interim some of those could have been moved down, realizing then as additional space would become necessary, we would have to replace it at some point or other. So we were looking, trying to see whether or not that it would be cost effective for us to not to necessarily spend the initial dollar amount that was requested in the interim. But what you're telling us basically is, because of the logistics of this and the uniformity that's there, that the utilization of this space would probably better be served if we went with replacing all of that, both the cubicles as well as the new furniture that is needed.
And I think I'm there on the downstairs drawing. I get it on 1, 2, 9, 10, 11, 12. I'm still looking at 3 through 8 and saying, how many different sizes do we currently have upstairs, and is there a possibility of taking 6 of the existing from upstairs, even though it's a different manufacturer? And so you're going from 11 to 6. Hopefully you can find similar sizes and piece together that middle of the room. What's listed on my diagram anyway is 3 through 8. Because those are the ones that will not be wall-mounted. They'll be straight cubicles. The rest of them I get that it's wall-mounted and it's a different system.
When we looked at this, there's an area where we call it a four-way connector because it's got four stations on. There is not one existing at this time. Not to say that, you know, if it comes down to it, that we can use what we can and separate. What I'm worried about is power connection because of not having the correct, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Power connection that runs all those panels. So that's kind of where the problem, the issue came in right there, is trying to find that cross connector, that four-way connector. Upstairs is either an L or a straight.
And I see that now as I look at the diagram. I would... Again, with our fiduciary responsibility sitting up here, I'm going to feel a whole lot better if we do everything we can to try to utilize and salvage some of what we have upstairs. And if that means going out and trying to find the four-way connector, trying to find the power, I have to believe that that's going to be more cost-effective than going and buying these 6, because that's what I'm talking about now. I'm talking about there's 6 of these cubicles that I believe there should be a way to salvage 6 from upstairs and utilize them directly. Again, I mean, this may be peanuts that I'm talking about, but I still believe that it's our responsibility to try to do this stuff.
I know that the discussion we had during the budget workshop was to try to locate any business that deals in surplus. I mean, with all the companies that have gone out of business in the last 5 years, there's got to be a pile of this kind of stuff sitting somewhere, and I never saw anything back from anybody that we contacted this company in Des Moines and they said no, we can't fulfill those needs, and I think that's what I was kind of waiting for, and then with the discussion of what was going to be vacant on the top floor last week is when we came and thought maybe we could move some of it, so
I think the issue was not only that, but it was also cost containment. We were trying to lower the total dollar figure for this move, realizing again that we still wanted to have a functional operation. But I don't, in my own way of looking at things, I don't think that the different sizes of panels should be should make a difference as far as delivery service. The key is whether or not they can be connected together and whether or not you have the needed power sources. And I'm not sure how that's figured in. Are they currently now into the walls of the panels? And
power for each station, it's coming up from the floor, and so it has its own power feed into the panel source.
Okay.
But that's not an issue. I think if we can find it on the floor like we're doing in this current proposed drawing, we can do that. And if somehow that we have to do two separate sections, and we just have to check with the architect to see where the power is coming from the floor to see if we have more than one source.
Well, I think the general consensus of this board is to find the most cost-effective way to provide this with as limited a dollars as we possibly can spend in this particular reconfiguration, because again, utilizing existing furnishings where possible appears to be the most feasible way for us to go at this point in time. Looking.
What kind of turnaround time do we have between making a decision to go with Story Kenworthy at whatever level, whether it's all the cubicles or some of them, and being able to have the items?
The proposed move-in date on our schedule right now, based on the architect and Al Hahn, was April 2nd through the 4th, so in the next week, because the lead time is about 3 to 4 weeks.
When's Al Hahn back?
That April 2nd and 3rd, that was to allow time for the furniture and for the cubicles to be installed, and then we were actually moving the following week, the week of the 9th.
Yeah, and I'm not discrediting you at all from Story Kenworthy, but in all of our previous work here at the county, having Al's expertise and ability to assist us in making that decision in terms of what needed to be moved or not moved has proven to be very effective, and that's the only concern that I have right now, is moving forward with that without having his input. I'm just not comfortable with that, knowing what our track record historically has been with his oversight, because there could be some things that we could do internally with the existing staff that would also be cost effective for us, rather than having to contract that out. And I'm not sure exactly what that is at this point. So again, trying to push that decision timetable as close as possible further out, I think will be in everybody's best interest, if I'm just following the general consensus of what I've heard from the other two board members as well. And I don't know whether Cal can assist us in the meantime with that or not, but I would think we would be better served to wait until Al is back before we make that final decision.
And I agree. I mean, I think it's very important to have Al's input on this, and then he can also speak to the issue, Paul, that you brought up as far as checking with some of those other companies on other furniture. I know he had talked to someone. I wasn't involved in that conversation, so I'm not sure exactly who it was. But trying to find the amount of panels and the types of furniture then that would work in those areas, I think, was proven to be a little bit difficult, but we can certainly follow up with him on that. So is it fair to say we're deferring this then until Al returns? Or do we need to be looking at, as Cindy indicated, talking with the architect in the meantime to find out about the power source, and then whether or not cubicle sizes or the panels would work within that 6-cubicle area?
We talked about coming in and inventorying the existing upstairs. We wanted to wait until we got feedback from the board, but to come in and take inventory of everything and try to lay it out in this way and see if everything would work and be cohesive and all that, and we're willing to do that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, for me, Deb, I think effectively it's deferring a decision until Al gets back. But I feel very strongly that as a board, we've not been given options. I mean, we don't know what our options are other than going and buying all new stuff and putting it down there. And until I have those options, I'm not going to be comfortable making a decision based on one option as presented. So it probably takes Al back in order to get those options. But until I have some, I'm not going to be comfortable saying, yeah, go ahead. So I would suggest that if Story Kenworthy is willing to go in and do the inventory and see what is workable from upstairs to downstairs, and I'm really, for me, I'm not including what's in the offices. I'm wanting right. to leave what's in the offices up there.
That's my preference.
I'm thinking more in but that said, I'm not convinced that we need all new stuff
right.
in the offices downstairs
exactly.
either, and I just want to hear what our options are, if any. And that's what I don't feel like I've heard yet.
And if we had to push the move-in date, I mean, it's my understanding there's nobody standing in line for the space upstairs, so it's not like.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I think the move, that's a little more flexible.
Okay.
Again, based on, I mean, depending on what we get for new furniture, then based on what Story Kenworthy's, you know,
right.
or whatever company, and, you know, their time frame.
Right, and knowing now that we need about a 3 or 4 week lead time for it, if we do have to go ahead and order whatever we need to order, okay.
Yeah, so Cindy, my request would be give us some options from your perspective, and then as Al gets back, well, I guess we'll talk to Cal today, but try to get us as many options as we can have in getting this outfitted.
Good, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then moving on to item number 4, consideration of open public records request. Matt Emerson, this was a topic that was discussed at our last meeting. We sent it back for some revisions, and I think those, well, as far as I can tell, they have been added here. And, Matt, if you could just maybe walk us through so that we are sure that we have attempted to convey exactly what it was we were concerned with last week. I would appreciate it. And I don't know if you want to join him or not, Assistant County Attorney. It might be helpful. The bottom line is I know you have helped with this draft, so we appreciate that. Okay.
Help is a relative word, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Matt, you're becoming a regular here, but I appreciate the work that you guys did here. And on my read-through of this, it looks to me like we made every effort to convey what this is supposed to do, that this is not supposed to hinder, that it's just supposed to clarify and simplify and make sure that we can track the request. So thank you for the work. I'd be interested to hear any thoughts you guys have.
Well, I think this helps out an awful lot in addressing some of the concerns that were put forth last week. This is not a policy that circumvents or changes anything from state law. It just kind of gives us an in-house set of steps that the public can use to go through. And it's clearly outlined in here that this isn't intended to circumvent the chapter 22, and that the things with people being able to make records requests anonymously, and they can address any concerns they have with trying to get those directly with individual departments, has been outlined in here. One of the areas that we did have a little of an ambiguity or is yet to be determined is the part dealing with the fees. Trying to get a standardized fee structure in place that I think is going to need some additional thought and deliberation about how we're going to be able to do that countywide. But it's outlined in here that everything that is organized under the board would adopt that, and then individual directly elected officials would be able to determine that on their own. So I think that for uniformity and simplicity in the public's eyes, that it would probably be worthwhile to try talking with other departments to see if we could try to get something structured countywide for that, so that people know when they make a request or come into an office just exactly what they can expect as far as cost goes or any kind of things, so that it makes it a simplified procedure with that.
Well, I like that it gives them kind of the basics of what you can expect, but it also gives you one person, sorry, Alyssa, it gives you one person that you can contact if you have an issue or a question, somebody who can help you through the process. So I appreciate the work. Mr. Chair, I would encourage us if there's anybody in the audience who would have comments, that we hear them.
Yes, and just before that, regarding the fees, the only thought that I had, again, was that annually different departments over time bring to the board or desire to change those fees. And so the key here would be the way that they would be publicized and available to the public well in advance to know if there are any changes. So if we did not have total standardization, particularly within elected offices, there should be ample time for public notification that there is a change in the fee for that particular area. And that's the process that I believe that we want to carry forth as our official countywide policy. Not saying that we are going to dictate to elected officers that they can't set their own fee,
sure.
But you know, we do need to be able to make sure the public is well aware and of any changes in fees that exist, and where we can standardize them as close to the same within a calendar year or two would be ideal, obviously.
Yep.
Okay. And with that, as Mr. Sanders indicated, if there's anyone from the public that would like to comment, Lawrence would certainly give you an opportunity. I know this is an area you have expressed a lot of interest, so feel free.
Thank you. All of my concerns from last week were addressed here and addressed very straightforwardly, and I appreciate that. There is a change in here that wasn't discussed last week. If you go to the section of the fees, and under number 4, it says the actual cost of employee time to supervise the examination of a public record is over 1 hour. Your draft had 3 hours. My concern with this is what supervision, having a lot of supervision has to do with what type of setup the office you're in. Do they have an extra desk where you can sit right there in view of staff as you're thumbing through records? Okay. In that case, it's really not supervision per se. Those people go on with their own work. Oftentimes, more and more people may have a scanning device or bring in a camera and take a picture. But if you're duplicating by hand and you're looking at a couple of long records, you could very easily eat up 1 hour. So I thought the 3 hours was a fair determination, since even what is supervision is open to interpretation of the department head or the elected official. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm trying to find exactly where that
this
is.
This is second page, bottom of the page. Steve, Matt, any thoughts on that? I didn't even notice that it had changed from one draft to the next.
Oh, I see. After 3 hours.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it here. I'm trying to remember. I did make that change, and it wasn't to surprise anyone. So I think my thought was that the once the record requires some supervision, and I totally agree with Ms. Olson that is subject to interpretation, but I guess my argument would be that the department head elected officials, the custodian of that, and has some discretion to determine what the supervision should be. So to the extent that I think we'll define that, I think is somewhat of an impossibility. What I would say is that, again, the policy says that if those, I think it encourages at the very least that we talk about fees with the public beforehand. And I will tell you, as the county's legal counsel, would be a difficult position for me to take to say that we have documents ready and a person waiting to see them. Oh, and by the way, now we've figured out that we want someone there to make sure nobody walks out with them, that kind of thing. So what I think we have to understand is this policy favors the public, not the government. So in all instances where a decision comes down to favoring the public or the government, I'll tell you what my advice is going to be, flat out. So again, this policy is intended to implement the law, which is Chapter 22, which clearly, if you read the case law, right, favors the public. So in no way do I think it should be viewed that way. Now, that's an arbitrary number, bottom line. 1 hour, 3 hours, no hours. That's probably, to be honest with you, more of a political decision, not partisan political, but a political decision more than a legal one. I seem to recall the three-hour notation being made in some of the materials I'd read on this. There's no magic to 1, 3, 0, whatever we want to put down there. So if it's a problem, it can be changed as far as I'm concerned. If it ever becomes a problem, you know what my advice will be.
I would suggest maybe we leave it the way it stands, and if it becomes a problem...
You know, it's funny, I have had feedback on this, and in fact, one department head said, look, you know, I've got somebody who just emails me regularly, wants some, I don't know who this person is, I have an email, and I just send it to them. So I think there's general consensus in the county now, and a general feeling that if somebody wants something, we're going to give it to them. Really, the only questions that come up, again, are, you know, employee personnel records. We clearly have folks in community services, community life, where HIPAA may be involved. There's law enforcement intelligence data that is obviously protected, those types of situations. But I think generally people are pretty good about identifying those sorts of issues and asking about that when it comes up. You know, you'll see I crossed out legal counsel may be consulted because I thought, well, that goes without saying and,
right,
and doesn't need to be said. So.
Any other thoughts, questions regarding the policy as amended?
I'm ready to get it out there for 7-day review.
Okay, now let me ask again, just the concept again so that we're clear. The purpose of the 7-day review is just consistent with countywide policy. Whenever we amend a policy and so forth, we use that. However, the implementation of the request, as we stated last week, by state law does not change how we go about making sure that this is done. This is just so the 7-day is really more for informational purposes to allow our elected officials, department heads, to clearly understand that we have a policy now in place and that it's important that they not only address it from the leadership, but whoever within their department that's going to be responsible for helping disseminate this information, that is made available. Is that
I think that's
concept?
Right. I mean, I don't see anything changing. In fact, I hope that our ability to respond gets better because I'll just tell you from my perspective, most of the questions I get about open records come internally about how do we handle this, what's the procedure process. So you know, I hope the policy is written such that it actually becomes quicker, more efficient, and that, you know, we have a system in place that we can observe ourselves doing this.
Okay.
As we have Alyssa in charge of keeping track of data and how things are handled, does that include any fees that we charge? Because I'm gonna be really curious to see if in fact we go forward with this, are we ever hitting the 1 hour? I think Loris brings up a good point. If somebody's in there actually copying down by hand, an hour is going to go pretty quick. But I can't see where we're gonna hit that very often, if ever.
I honestly don't either, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to speak for Matt, you know, but I don't see that either. The records requests that I've seen come across my office are really fairly simple, straightforward, and I think very producible. I don't see that happening, but I think it's certainly worthy of keeping track of. And I didn't put a lot in here about how we'll do that. Alyssa will be in charge of that, however she wants to track cases. I thought she's an intelligent and smart person. that alone becomes a public record. The public will be entitled to see whatever data we keep, and they can let us know if they think we're doing it right or wrong, and or if we need to improve. So, and that's really it. You know, it shouldn't just be anecdotal, because I can come to you now with anecdotal evidence that I think we're doing a pretty good job now, but I don't have any proof of that. So again, the idea isn't to make this more difficult, but so that we can do some self-examination and have the public let us know if they think we're doing okay with this.
Okay, and Alyssa, the question comes is, if for some reason you're out of the office dealing with other business and so forth, and this request comes through and it may be more than one day, you will hopefully have a backup person as a go-to to make sure that we are aware of the timetable by which the request is received and the getting the information out as prescribed, okay? So, good. I didn't want to put Paul on the spot yet, but I know you will. Okay. Okay. So with that, board, I would entertain a motion to proceed.
So we're not going to necessarily put it back out for 7 days.
Well,
or we are.
I think if I heard the rationale for it is yes, we will put it out for the 7 days, okay, for that purpose of here. But as far as the actual adoption, consistent with other policies, we would make that final adoption after that 7-day review, but nothing is
okay. I'm going to move approval of the revised records policy pending the 7-day review, and just ask Matt if he would put another email out to all the users today that there is a revised copy. I think Steve did that anyway, but just put another email out that there is a revised copy, and they have 7 days to make comments.
I'll second it, and I would ask that it also, this amended copy without the line-throughs and everything else, be part of our packet for next week's meeting, since that's where final approval would occur.
Correct.
If you could get that cleaned-up copy to Shelley so she can include it.
Question, Judy, I saw her hand, didn't comment earlier. Would you like to, I will allow you to email the ASAP.
My name is Judy Hoffman. I signed in as a member of the League of Women Voters observing the meeting today. I would like to speak just as an individual. But from my background as a city council member for many years, I would encourage you, if in any way you could, to have consistency or standardization of the fees. I think
yes,
for the general public,
right,
that is very, very important, and it'll keep you out of a lot of trouble if you have standardized fees. And I realize the county system is different than the city, but whatever you can do to make it easier for the public, I think that is
right. That is our intent. We're hoping
you.
We can do that. Thank you. Okay, so with that, we have a motion and a second to move forward and resubmit this for the 7-day review. So all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And again, Matt, thank you, and thank you, Stephen, for your work in this area. And
you're back up here next week. We're going to get you your own chair.
We'll be back with some bids and contracts.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. All righty. Okay, item number five is consideration of interest rates for stamp warrants. Jane, would you come on down, please?
Jane, are we finally getting near the end of this thing?
I hope so. Originally, we had requested on the January 31st agenda that the rate be set at 6%, and some changes were made, and I believe it was they were going to, or you gentlemen were going to set the rate for the Milford 32 at the next meeting, and I don't think that has actually finalized yet. Now we're getting to the point we need to pay these, and we still don't have an interest rate, so we would like to set that at 6% like we had originally requested.
Is this for all stamped warrants or just for this one?
All stamped warrants.
Okay.
is my understanding.
That was my understanding also. And that's the interest that we pay the contractors while they're waiting, while the county waits for the funds to come in, the revenues to come in, to pay the contractors. That's what the stamp warrants actually are. Okay.
And so that I'm clear, anything that we had come in prior to us taking the last action of saying up to, we're paying at
7%.
Now we've given ourselves flexibility to deal with these issues as they come. And I would guess at our organizational meeting each year we could
set that rate.
But I just want to make sure I'm clear. This sets the rate of what we're paying to the contractors. It doesn't set anything that we talked about with the people in Milford 32 in terms of those that choose
extend
to pay over
payments.
Time. We're going to set that at a later
date.
That's
a separate
item.
If they choose to waiver them.
Right.
Right.
But that's a separate item that we'll have to come back and set at that time. It does, this action does not impact
this
that.
Does not affect that at all. And I thought that had been agreed on prior.
Right. Good.
Based on the number of people who want to waiver it.
Right. Good.
I'm going to move that we set the interest rate for stamped warrants beginning, I would assume, today.
Well, I think it has to begin from back when we
whenever they were.
Okay.
Because
there was some original changes made to it that it not go over above the
7.
The above the state rate.
Right.
And that state rate has been at 6%. I have documentation here from 1996. So it hasn't moved.
Right.
Okay. Then I'll simply move that we set the interest rate for stamp warrants at 6%.
Thank you.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we set the interest rate for stamp warrants at 6%. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. And now, consideration of claims.
I would move approval of the claims list.
Second.
And moved and second the approval of the claims. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Claims are approved. Agency report. Sue, Ames Community Preschool. See, I told you we'd get through you.
All right, there. Can you hear me? Okay. All right. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I decided y'all need to come to my world. My world's a whole lot more fun. Dealing with the children, the claims and warrants and open records and all that good stuff. So you're welcome to come by anytime. So I am here to talk about Ames Community Preschool Center. And I took my first page of the asset report because it has the statistics that are real quick like for me to tell you about. We are primarily just a child care center, but we're a child care center of 18 months through fifth grade. We are in the First Christian Church, which is that beige brick church across from the City Hall. Then we own property along 6th Street where we have toddlers. And then we have before and after school kids in the various public schools in Ames. So I have a flyer just to update you that describes where our programs are. And we've been going since 1968. We're the first nonprofit child care center in Ames, and we're still going strong. So that's a good thing to hear about child care. And the need for it obviously has increased. You know, I've been there 30 years, and I feel a little bit like I've grown up with child care because of the changes and the demand and so forth has increased so with the number of working parents. The asset money that we get from you all is, last year it was $11,900. That money is, along with the city money, along with the United Way money, is used to subsidize our sliding fee scale. And our fee scale is in the asset budget. But just as a description or an example, a two-year-old would, a parent that could afford to pay, would pay $745 a month. And a lower-income person would pay $400 and so a month. So we're giving a $300 to $400 discount to the parents. Most of our parents are either able to pay or their income is quite low. We don't seem to have very much middle. And the city and the county had sort of dictated a number of years back how they wanted our fee scales to run, and they wanted them to be for the lower level people, which is what ours truly is. So we had last year 22% of our families that were accessing that fee scale one way or another. The younger age children would get a large discount. The before and after school children wouldn't get as much of a discount because they're not, their bill isn't as great. So that would vary. So the estimated money that you're giving us for next year is a slight increase. We ask for a slight increase. We don't usually ask for a lot more. We usually ask for about a 4% tuition increase from our parents and about a 4% increase from asset. There's no question in my mind that we could fill ACPC with all lower income families. There are enough of them in the area, either low income because they're students or low income because it's a single mom that's working at Quiznos or something. So we could fill that, but we obviously have to have a cap. It's not like the free and reduced meals at the schools where it can just go on and on. So our money is capped by the amount of asset money that we have. And I have a way to track that with the computer program that we use, so I can call up on a monthly basis how much asset money we're giving out, because it's complicated, as you might guess, since there's varying degrees of it. So usually ACPC has been a pretty financially stable agency, and we still are, but this year has been a much rockier year for us than we've had for a number of years. I think the healthcare costs, the food costs, salaries, everything just all of a sudden hit this year, and it took us a number of months. Our fiscal year is July to June. It took us a number of months this year to say, whoa, okay, you know, when the accountant calls and says, hey, Sue, have you looked? I say, yeah, I've looked. But we're in much better shape now. It's just summertime is when people leave, and then the new kids don't start. So every year we seem to start sort of behind the eight ball, and then it takes us a while to catch up. So we have a strong board of directors, and hopefully we'll continue to have that. We have an outside audit done. The board looks at the audit and participates with that. Most of the asset agencies do have an audit, but I remember several years ago Sheila Lunt calling me and saying, Sue, your audit was one of the best audits to just read and understand. So they apparently liked the firm that does our audits. So our board, just to give you an example of where they all work, one, our president works at McFarland. Our vice president works at Mary Greeley. Our secretary works at Iowa State. And our treasurer is a bank officer at First National Bank. So they kind of represent all the major employers in our area. And that's great because they bring then the perspective of different parents. So that's about all that I had. Oh, about 50 of our families are Story County families, I mean outside of Ames, Story County families, which is higher than it has been. They're in small towns. They're in Nevada or Story City or Huxley, or they're just outside of Ames. So that was the only other thing I thought might be of interest to you. Do you have any questions for me?
Just curious, the 22% of families that, uh-huh, that access the sliding scale, any guesstimate or do you know if that same percentage holds true to the 50 families that are from outside Ames that I would believe that our 11,900 are going to support?
No, there isn't. I would say more of our lower income families are from inside of Ames.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thank you again for your service and on behalf of our youth. Okay?
Well, and thank you for continuing to support ASSA.
Okay. Okay, then moving on to departmental report, Julie Fairclough from Juvenile Court. Thank you. Shirley. Did I say Julie?
Did.
Why did I have Julie on my mind today?
For, you're doing all right for a guy who's a little under the weather.
Yes.
Shirley, how are you today?
I am doing great. How about the three of you?
Good. Two of us are fine.
Two are good. Wayne's struggling a little.
Well, I appreciate being able to come before the three of you and give you an update. As I usually do, I always start with the budget information. I'll start on a statewide level. The judicial branch budget is approximately 3% of the overall state government budget, and that is really has not increased for the last several years. While the rest of the state government did grow, we have continued to be reduced, and in fact, our staffing levels are similar to what they were 20 years ago. So, Chief Justice Mark Cady has requested an additional $10 million to the judicial branch budget. Obviously, we don't know where that's at, but I'm certainly hoping that we do get that additional funding, because often you, the county representatives, end up picking up some of that difference, or those costs get shifted to you. I am very pleased to report that within our Story County budget, we are within our guidelines and doing very well with what you have provided for the county, and so thank you for your efforts there. I am going to, and I do have some reports that I didn't get done ahead of time with some stats, if I can approach.
Sure. I like that. Very, very court-esque of you.
Yeah.
That's right. You can approach anytime you want. Blanket approval.
Quit. when you look at the graphs on there, what I did is include some of the referrals that we've had just from the beginning of the year through February 23rd, and I broke those out into age groups on the front page. And then on the back, I do have them grouped according to if they're substance abuse-related, assault, drug possessions, forgery. One of the things I do need to clarify, and I did not catch it until I was sitting here reviewing this, in the alcohol, the top chart, the alcohol, we have the other category that shows 11. I need to follow up on that. I'm assuming that maybe should be in the serious misdemeanor and maybe OWIs, but I'm not sure. So I will get that clarified and have that corrected next time I appear. Under the other public disorder, that looks, we're going to recreate that title. That would be referring to disorderly conduct charges, some of which would be coming out of the school district. One of the things that I did not do that I will try to do is break down which charges are we seeing coming from community-based, and then also looking to see what is coming from within their school systems.
I'm sorry, Shirley, can you give me what the acronyms across the top are?
Yes, aggravated misdemeanor. Very good question, okay. And I will change that. The second one would be felonies.
Okay.
The other, I need to clarify. I'm not sure why we have that. The fourth one would be simple misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one would be serious misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point.
And then on the front, CBHO?
Caucasian, okay. Black, Hispanic, other.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out. We do these in-house. And
well, we all fall into, yeah, we all fall into speaking our lingo, and I only speak one language, and even that one not very well.
The average caseload of our three juvenile court officers is approximately 50 clients. That obviously varies from day to day. Of those, we have five in the state training school, four of which are at the state training school in Eldora and one in Toledo. We currently have four in detention, and again, that's a very fluid number. We have eight placed in shelters, and that would include Rosedale and some of the other shelters that we use throughout the state.
and then the last is currently 21 are in residential treatment facilities. And so then as a result of that, we are visiting with clients, you know, that takes us outside of the Story County area. One of the projects that I've mentioned before the board that we're looking at to really reduce travel expense and improve communication with the family is taking advantage of technology and being able to use some laptops and having parents visit. It will not take away with our face-to-face visits once a month, and we would certainly hope it would not take away the face-to-face visits that families are having with their sons or daughters. We are moving closer, and I hope that within the month I'll be able to provide an update that we have started using that technology, and we'll continue to update the board on that. But especially Iowa Winters, and when we have uncontested hearings, if we can have those hearings and not have to put families on the road, everybody benefits from that. Just for your information, our Juvenile Court Officers Association had submitted 3 legislative priorities for the legislature. One is rebuilding the judicial staffing levels, that this would allow the clerk of court offices to have full-time public access hours. There's currently 33 of the 99 counties that have part-time clerk's office. We're lucky that that's not an issue here in Story County. Second would be to support the judicial branch salary bill. The state budget procedures do not allow inclusion of these types of expenses in a budget recommendation, and the state handles salary increases in a separate process called the salary bill. So there was no salary bill for fiscal year 2012, and it's questionable whether there will be one for FY13. And juvenile court officers have not had any salary increase for 3 years and, in fact, lost income because we had furlough days and even a reduction in mileage down to 25 cents for a period of time, which obviously with the gas prices going up, that is a direct hit. And then the third one is what we're calling once waived, always waived. Currently, if an individual is close to 18, and it can be 16 or over, but we typically see it closer to that 18th birthday and have a charge. We have a hearing in juvenile court, and then if the court determines that charge should be handled in district court, adult court, it's waived. The way the current legislature is that we're waiving the charge, not necessarily the child. So there are cases where we've had multiple waivers on individuals and looking at streamlining that process. Juvenile court continues to help support funding for the following programs that serve clients and families in Story County, that being functional family therapy, Radner's Day Treatment, Client Services Coordinator, which provides supervision for community service projects throughout the county, a restitution program so that victims are able to be compensated and the client then works off the amount for the payment to the victim. And then we also have weekend offender programs for both boys and girls. I want to continue to thank the board for your support. Also appreciate regarding office space. I know that's a very difficult issue that you have to address and really looking at being fiscally responsible, and we appreciate your continued support for juvenile court.
Any other questions for
Shirley, before you go, can you give us a quick update on DCAT? What's going on with Story County DCAT and where that appears to be moving?
Okay. DCAT, actually, I think with the restrictions in finances, we've done a better job coordinating between DCAT and asset and county funding and money with juvenile court, how we can work together to enhance services in Story County. There was some legislative changes that next year we'll be able to have a 2-year budget, and so that will give the DCAT board a lot a better chance to plan thoughtfully and really look at ongoing services. I missed the last meeting, Rick, so you might have to help me out. Did the mini grants, I think there were some mini grants that were
some were approved and some were held.
Okay.
Yeah. The way it works right now, guys, with DCAT and the 1-year budgeting, You don't know what funding you really have until you get to February or March, and then you've got to utilize that before the end of June. And so it's a real yo-yo effect of, yeah, give us your proposals, but we can't really do anything. So hopefully the two-year budgeting will help take care of that. And then I wanted you to address for these guys briefly, if you could, the proposed combining of services with other counties.
Okay. Currently, we're looking at, with the change in this next year, we'll have half of the budget going into that new cycle. And empowerment is now called, you're going to have to help me out with that.
Boost for Children.
And they, Empowerment has decided to combine with Boone County. Our current DCAT in court Empowerment Coordinator was one position, so that would leave that as a half-time position. We are working with Boone County to see if there would be some benefit in combining resources from a hiring standpoint so that we could hire one FTE to cover two counties. It would not change the structure for Story County. We would still have a separate Story County board. We just believe that we would be able to get somebody more qualified and that wouldn't see so much turnover in that position if we had it as one FTE versus a half-time. So, thank you.
Thank you for the update, and especially in the area of DCAT and empowerment, because we keep hearing that there's been ongoing discussions about how and if what changes might take place. So
I will make sure I note that and bring that back each time.
Okay. All right. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Moving on then, liaison and committee updates. Paul, anything?
No.
Rick?
Paul, would you mind just giving us an update on our computer or our IT consultant?
They were two individuals were up Friday and had been down, went to the IT staff meeting Friday morning. And I think the plan is to send one individual back today to meet with Gayla Harkin over at Community Life and try to work through some of the issues they've had over there with their getting the new CLIP system implemented, and then maybe try to address, along with another vendor, try to address some of the slow internet access complaints that they've had over there. But basically, I think I had a good report from him on both individuals on Friday about how they think things are going, and I think we're headed in the right direction. I've seen an improvement in some of the faces and some of the employees down there, so I think it's gotten better than it was here a couple of weeks ago. So,
well, thanks for staying on top of it for us.
Thank you. Anything, Rick?
No. Nope.
Okay, I'll pass. Okay, moving on. Personnel action. There are several were listed. Well, actually, there's one here listed.
I move approval.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and second. The approval of the personnel action. Hearing no comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Personnel action is approved. on the consent agenda, board, please remove items number 11 and 12. Then all other items are good to go.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Been moved and second. The approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Mr. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. Public forum. This is comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action at this time, but may do so in the future. I understand we may have a gentleman that wanted to address the board. So,
yeah, I think I copied you guys on a response to an email that I got from Chuck Winkleblack. And Gib, I'm sorry, I don't have your last name. Gib Wood.
Gib Wood. Okay.
I believe is going to ask us for a letter of support. I've indicated that we can't take any action in this format today, but we can sure hear what he has to say and then get it on the agenda for next week if we are so inclined. So thank you. Welcome.
You want me to spit through here?
Yes.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Thank
Let's
you.
Record it.
Okay. Name and where you're from.
Yep. My name is Gib Wood. I'm with Scenic Development Company. I actually live in Olathe, Kansas. Born and raised in Webster City, Iowa. All of my partners are Iowans. But we Scenic Development started about 1975. We're a family-owned company. We're in the retirement home business, and we have a project in Iowa Falls that that was our original project. We just completed a project in Grimes, Iowa, and we're looking at Ames for another project that's very similar to the one we completed in Grimes. What we build are continuing care retirement communities. These are smaller projects. Typically, CCRCs are large projects that kind of self-feed their assisted living and nursing home, where they have, you know, anywhere from 100 to 200 units of independent living. We have a different model. We'll have approximately 30 of each independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing. And we rented them out instead of having endowment payments, so it's a rental model. And we try to serve a middle market, so anywhere from lower to upper middle class, where the CCRC model, where buy-in typically serves the higher-end market. We've located a site that Hunziker controls. It's in Northwest Ames. I have a picture of it here. If you can see this or not, but this is the extension of Bloomington Road as it heads north. I think it's George Washington Carver Road here, actually. My architect has that wrong. And this is farm ground now. Across the road is a subdivision. So you familiar with that, where that is?
Yeah, that's yeah. That would be up near the fairway.
Huh? Yes. And we'll have two stories of independent living with parking on the lower level, two stories of assisted living, 34 units of assisted, and then we'll have 38 beds of skilled nursing. The nursing home requires a certificate of need, so that's why I'm here today to introduce you to the project and also to ask your support, a letter of support to the state. I'll show you these other boards real quick, then I'll go over some of the state issues. This is our project here. It's a very nice-looking project, as you can see from this. I encourage you to get online to KennybrookVillage.com, which is our K-E-N-N-Y, B-R-O-O-K, Village.com. And that project in Grimes was finished back in October. This project will be designed by a company by the name of Ron Reed and Associates. They're nationally known for their design work on senior housing. Let's see here. I'm trying to do a quick brain dump on you and so I don't keep you too long. There is a Story County has a 370-bed need for nursing home.
According to who?
According to the state.
Okay.
State has guidelines for determining need. That's a statutory need. And we will be going in front of the state on April 4th to have the hearing, and we have to have all letters of support in by March 8th. Also, we did an internal third-party market study that showed that the Ames market, not Story County, but just the Ames market, had an 88-bed need for skilled nursing, had an 82-bed unit need for independent living, and then a 66-unit need for assisted living.
And you said you're 30, 30, and 30.
Well, we're going to be 38 independent, okay. 34 assisted, and 38 skilled nursing. So we're still way under the bed need for Ames. Cities like Ames typically have a lot more nursing home beds than Ames does. So you have a lot of the out-migration right now. Hopefully they're going to Storm City or Nevada or Boone or surrounding communities, but more than likely they're leaving town and going to another adult child lease that has facilities that meets their needs. Because right now in Ames we have North Crest and Green Hills, which are both very good projects, but they're both endowment models, and they have small nursing facilities, which are usually filled from within from their own independent living population. So then the only other option in Ames is Riverside and Abington on the Grand. So this will offer another option to folks that don't want to participate in the buy-in model, which is nothing wrong with that model. It's just another, it's just a different way of doing things. And we will accept Medicare and Medicaid. So we will have a Medicaid component.
So the process that you're going through right now, is this more community awareness type of an outreach, talking to decision makers, basically like you're coming to the board now for a letter of support? Are you also doing this at the city council in Ames as well?
Yes, I've talked to the mayor, and I've talked to Mary Greeley,
mm-hmm.
and private citizens. We'll have a lot of private citizens' letters of support also.
Mm-hmm. Good. And what type of timetable are you envisioning if the state would approve the concept of what you're proposing?
Well, we have all of our financing and we have all of our equity money in place, so we're ready to go from that end. We do have to, the land we're buying does need to be annexed. And from what I understand, that'll probably be a six-month process. So we hope to break ground in fall and beat the winter, but if not, we'll probably have to wait until spring.
And timing for us in terms of a letter of support, if we so so inclined to offer a letter of support,
yes,
you would need that by March 8th.
March 8th, yes.
What I think I saw in the email. So Wayne and Steve, help me with process here. I would think what we would request is you get us everything you can. Okay. In a form that we can readily convey to the public what we're talking about supporting, okay. along with, for me, I know it would be helpful if you gave us a kind of a sample letter of support that you've gotten from other entities, something that you're looking for. And we need it all by 3 p.m. Thursday. Is that right?
By
3 p.m. this Thursday in order to get it formally on the agenda for Tuesday where we could discuss whether to take any action or not.
Now, can this be in the form of an email? Can I email it to you?
I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can attach any information like the letter and all of those type of things.
We'll make sure we get you the information where you can email it. But, Steve, I mean, are we following proper protocol if we handle it all that way? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay.
And thank you for getting here. I know it was short last minute with Chuck sending the email yesterday, and thank you for coming and giving us a heads up that this is going to be on our plate.
Great.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for hearing me.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. Then moving on to announcements from the supervisors. Paul?
I know we've got the assessor conference board budget approval tonight. Another item that's going to be, I think, on the Ames City Council tonight that I have a little interest in, and that is the possibility of a new car dealership locating right there at the corner of Dayton and what is that, South 16th, where it runs out, between there and Highway 30. It's ground that traditionally has been underwater. I think there's going to be some good conversation among the City Council on whether to offer any kind of tax abatements or anything like that for the company. And, you know, it's not something that we're going to have any role in that I can see as supervisors, but these are the kind of things that I think we need to keep our eye on, what's happening in the area.
Okay. And I think Thursday is the day at the Capitol for the Iowa Association of Counties, supervisors and so forth. I've got several conflicts. I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to be able to be at all the different places, but there's also a juvenile justice advisory board meeting in Des Moines at the same time. And I've just received word that we have been requested to attend and hear Vice President Joe Biden on Thursday here in Ames. Trying to figure out how we can accommodate and attend some of those functions will be a challenge to say the least, but I will be at the meeting tonight for the City of Ames and so forth. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Been moved and second.
Figure that one out, Shelly.
It was moved by Paul, seconded by Rick. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Question, Steve.